couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, we are wrapping up 2022 with the best and the worst of the year. Plus, I'm going to be taking a look at the new film White Noise on Netflix. It was in theaters in a limited release a couple weeks ago, but now you can catch it on Netflix anywhere. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring a look at Halloween Ends. I know that's not exactly a New Year's kind of movie, but this is the window that things come out on DVD and Blu-ray. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The news is actually pretty thin this week because, you know, not a whole lot really happens in terms of Hollywood development between Christmas and New Year's, but there's a lot of things that we can look back on. But first, I want to let you know that I'm going to be announcing the winner of the Halloween Ends giveaway next week. So if you want to have a last-minute chance to send an email to HalloweenEnds@FatGuysAtTheMovies.com, you might have a chance of winning. Now, as we look back on 2022, it's been an interesting year for film, and two things have happened in the last couple of years. The first thing, obviously, everybody thinks about is COVID. I mean, COVID shut down theaters for a while. We had a very anemic 2020, and then there was a little bit of a resurgence in 2021, but even then it was very spotty at times. And even now in 2022, theaters are having a struggle trying to get their numbers even close to what they were pre-pandemic. And that is because of the other big thing that happened is streaming. Streaming took hold right before the pandemic. And a lot of people want to blame the streaming woes on COVID, but really, this was going to happen anyways. It may have worked slowly into the marketplace throughout the 20s, but with the availability of streaming and the different services cropping up, that was going to happen. That's a huge thing that's been taking hold, and we're sort of finding our new normal here. Now, there's a bunch of notable things that happened in 2022. In terms of films, the first one, it was such a surprise hit of how Top Gun Maverick did. No one expected that movie to do well. I mean, people expected that movie to do well, but not as well as it did. It had legs for days. And one of the things I found so interesting about the way that played in theaters is back in 1986 when the original Top Gun came out. The only way to do the flying sequences was with really bad blue screen or put real people against the real sky. And that's kind of how you did a fighter jet movie back in 1986. Fast forward 30 some years and you are now making a movie in today's world where everything is done with CGI. And the fact that not just Kaczynski who directed it, but Tom Cruise insisted on putting people in real cockpits and flying in real jets. I think that really lent an element of authenticity to the movie that people were craving to see. It's sort of like when you see a movie that doesn't use the CGI, but uses practical effects in terms of puppetry and makeup artistry that really catches people's eye. There's a lot of love for that. So I think that's one of the reasons Top Gun Maverick became such a big hit is because it was an authentic thing. Plus, it was a very streamlined hero movie. It's very rah-rah, waving your flag American, but it also tapped into multiple things, not just the nostalgia from the first one, but patriotism and everything like that. The other thing 2022 is going to be noted for is how well horror did. Horror had a huge year, even for a year where people weren't going to the theaters for the quote unquote middling movies, but movies like Barbarian and The Black Phone and Smile, and even stuff like The Menu, which is marginally horror, or something like Terrifier 2. This was this little movie that was going to just get like a Fathom release and ended up doing like $10 million, made people throw up in theaters. And that was a flex for the people who made the movies. They were bragging about that. You did that. That's sort of like a 70s kind of thing. But we saw that happen this year. Animation also had a great year. There are a bunch of really good animated films. Puss in Boots, Marcel the Shell, Pinocchio. Well, I like the one on Disney Plus, but in particular, the Guillermo del Toro version. The Bad Guys, The Sea Beast, Chip and Dale, My Father's Dragon, and even Lightyear and Strange World I really liked, even though those kind of flopped for various reasons. But event movies are still making money, like the Marvel and superhero movies. Avatar, we're still wait to see how big of a hit that's going to be when all is said and done. But it's the middling, more grown-up fare movies that were losing steam because by the time some people got around to seeing them, you could watch them online. I mean, not just to rent them online for like $20. You could watch them on a streaming service. And I know streaming gets a lot of guff, but, you know, it is here to stay. And it's only going to get more expensive, unfortunately. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Time to launch into the trailer park. I want to hit a couple movies and talk about the stuff I'm looking forward to in 2023. And the first one, I like the Marvel movies. I like the superhero movies. Let's talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, in theaters on February 17th.
People still need help, Dad.
That's why we made this. It's like a satellite for deep space, but... Quanta.
Wait a minute. You're sending a signal down to the quantum realm. Turn it off.
Now!
It's a secret universe beneath ours.
What are you so afraid of?
There's something I never told you.
I like the Ant-Man movies. I like the Marvel movies. I like the whimsical nature of the Ant-Man movies. They don't get too heavy. I mean, as much as I like Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Ant-Man is like marginally a comedy, and I enjoy that. I like that kind of stuff in a Marvel movie, so I'm definitely looking forward to this. Everyone's talking about predicting the downfall of Marvel movies and superhero movies, but you know what? These are the ones that are making money. So I'm looking forward to this one. I'm also looking forward to, in May, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which is coming to theaters on May 5th.
Don't forget where we came from.
We have been running our whole lives.
Pete, I'm done running. We'll all fly away together. One last time.
This is going to be interesting because it's the swan song of James Gunn at Marvel, because I think if he's going to be running the DC universe, they're going to pull back and say, okay, well, you can't direct any more Marvel movies. And that makes sense, and I understand that. I'm very much looking forward to what he does. But the only thing that worries me about this one is I always hate when they have a movie that they're sort of coming to an end of a story, and then they're like, we have to kill somebody, or we have to do something significant. Just tell a story. Tell an ongoing story, and don't just kill somebody just because you can. And the Guardians of the Galaxy movies are supposed to be kind of fun anyway. So I'm hoping this one doesn't go too dark. The next one that I'm looking forward to is Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. It's coming to theaters July 14th.
Your days of fighting for the so-called greater good are over. This is our chance to control the truth, the concepts of right and wrong for everyone for centuries to come. You're fighting to save an ideal that doesn't exist. Never did. You need to pick a side.
I like the Mission Impossible movies. I think they've taken a long time to get where they were, and it wasn't until they got to about Ghost Protocol that they really clicked as the international spy movies, basically an American version of James Bond. And these look good. I mean, this actually looks like a James Bond movie. Tom Cruise is starting to get a little long in the tooth. But I'm a little worried because, you know, it's a part one, and I never like the idea of a part one and part two if they're bloating the movie. But if it's a 1-2 punch story like Infinity War, I'm okay with that. I am looking forward to Mission Impossible, though. Other movies that are coming out that I'm looking forward to, because I'm a big fan, I grew up with this, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. I'm also looking forward to Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Played a trailer for that a couple of weeks ago. And then I'm really curious to see what happens with the Aquaman and the Flash movies this year, because those are pretty much done. And I want to see if they're going to just sort of use that to put a cap on the DC movies, if they're going to add stuff to it to finish it off, or if they're going to somehow try and tie it in. I have a feeling they're going to say, okay, this is the end of it. We're doing our final of this version of the DC universe, and look forward to some cool stuff coming later. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, I'm going to be talking about the best films of 2022.
Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm not reviewing a lot of movies, mainly because not a whole lot of movies have come out this week. So that's what you get when you get post-Christmas. Everything needs to come out before Christmas, and then you get the crappy horror movies in January. And some limited release stuff that's going to be rolling out. But I want to talk about the best of the year. I always like to give my version. I'm going to give you five, my top five movies of 2022. And you always can know there are some that have crossovers with other critics' lists. But I always have some different options in there. And let's start with number five.
I'm tired of people thinking I'm some kind of joke.
Your dad and I agreed it would be best if you just stop being who you are and doing the things you love.
My whole life. All I wanted.
I'm afraid we found your son at a polka party.
Just to make up new words to a song that already exists.
Oh. Well, you should do that then.
My little hungry one. Hungry one. Open up a package of my banana.
Weird was such a weird movie. It was such a bizarre movie. The fact that it came out on Roku, on the Roku channel, was a strange release product. I love the fact that Roku actually got its hands on a major release. And I love Weird Al. I've listened to Weird Al since the 80s. So, I mean, I grew up with Weird Al. And I loved how clever this movie was in not just emulating the biopics like Ray or Walk the Line. And they're even better than like Dewey Cox, Walk Hard, did in sort of parodying the musical biopic, but it also parodied stuff like Boogie Nights and that sort of thing. And it just was very expertly done and very clever. I really enjoyed it. In my number fourth spot is one that I just talked about recently.
Papa! It speaks!
He's just a puppet.
No, I'm not. I'm a real boy.
People are sometimes afraid of things they don't know.
I don't understand.
Ah, we have found him, our star.
Everyone shall love you and call your name, Binocular.
Guillermo del Toro is such a master filmmaker, and he's such an artist, and I don't use that term lightly. Guillermo del Toro is somebody you can be guaranteed that when he puts together a movie, there is a love of cinema and a love of the original story. Add to it the fact that he is putting together a stop-motion movie. And stop-motion movies, and one of the things that Del Toro said is this is a kind of, you know, stop-motion is that kind of art form that is perpetually disappearing. It is always in trouble of going extinct because it takes so much time. And especially now with CGI and technology, you can spread the work around and there's so many different programs that you don't need to take that intricate work on something like this. But the artistry and the detail and the brilliance of putting together a movie like this, I respect almost any stop motion movie I've seen. And I always have loved stop motion. And there was another really good one, Wendell and Wild, that came out on Netflix. That was Harry Selleck, who co-directed Nightmare Before Christmas. And he did like James and the Giant Peach. But Pinocchio is just such a brilliant adaptation. And it says so much, and it's for kids and for adults. It's one of the best movies of the year. So that came in at number four. And number three, we've got this little surprise.
I'm renting this place.
No, I booked it a month ago.
Why don't you come inside, and we'll call these idiots. It's dry, and there's a lock on the door. You take the bedroom, and I'll sleep out here on the couch.
This process might seem overwhelming. But with a little practice, it can soon become a pleasurable experience.
You're not seeing this in a lot of top 10 lists, but I loved it. Like I said earlier in the show, horror had such a great year in 2022. And this was one of the gems out there. Barbarian, it was nothing about it was new. All the elements you've seen before, all the scenes and all the tropes and all the things that take place in the movie, for the most part, you've seen a version of them in another movie somewhere else. I could almost point to this, oh, this scene's like from that movie, and this scene's like from that movie. But the way it was constructed by a comedic director to begin with. I mean, Zach Cregger, who directed this, he's best known for being in like The Whitest Kids You Know. He does crappy sketch comedy. And he just knocked it out of the park with this. And when you show him and somebody like Jordan Peele, you really show the darkness of comedian soul. But he made such a great movie with Barbarian. It's so surprising, and it turns the genre on its ear while staying true to the genre itself. And that's one of the reasons why I love Barbarian. Another movie from a genre that I absolutely love is coming up next.
It's pretty much common knowledge that it takes at least 20 shells to have a community. My cousin fell asleep in a pocket, and that's why I don't like the saying everything comes out of the wash. Because sometimes it doesn't, or sometimes it does, and they're just like a completely different person. So it's actually only two of us now. Myself and my grandmother, Nana Connie. Sometimes I find my mind wandering. What would my family think? Do you think they could be out there?
At the number two spot, I've got Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. This was an obscure movie. Not a whole lot of people saw it. Based on these little YouTube videos of an animated anthropomorphized shell with these little tennis shoes on. Jenny Slate does the voice for it. The movie itself is a full movie about the shell trying to find its family. And it is so sweet. And there's some real tenderness and some real humanity and heart in there that you wouldn't expect from, you say, oh, Jenny Slate did a goofy animated film. And it's animated. I mean, it's a mixture of live action and animation, but I think it works. Totally worth seeing. If you've not checked it out yet, you need to watch Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, number two movie of the year. And here's my number one.
Now, if I've done something to you, just tell me what I've done to you.
Well, you didn't do anything to me. I just don't like you no more.
You liked me yesterday.
Why does he not want to be friends with you no more? Why is he 12?
If you don't stop talking to me, and if you don't stop bothering me, I have a set of shears at home, and each time you bother me from this day on, I'll take those shears, and I'll take one of my fingers off with them, and I'll give that finger to you, until I have no fingers left.
That's right. For those of you who've been listening to me for the last couple months, The Banshees of Inisher Erin is my favorite movie of 2022. It was such a fresh movie. It was so different. It's very Irish. I've seen my fair share of Irish cinema and Irish television. I mean, like, from Ireland, not British stuff that pretends to be Irish. I'm talking about real, honest-to-God Irish stuff, both Ireland and Northern Ireland. I've seen, and they kind of have the same connective tissue because, you know, a lot of their history is shared. But The Banshees of Inisher Erin is so beautifully done. It's gorgeous looking because of its location being on Ireland. And the characters, they're so funny. It's so dark, but it's also hilariously funny. And I know a lot of people cock their head to the side and go, really? That's funny? This is the kind of story that you want? It just is. It's so dry. It's done by the same guy who did like Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. And he also did In Bruges. And if you've seen those movies, you understand. He's got a very dark sense of humor, but it's also compelling and different and it seems very down to earth and warm and friendly, but it has these shocking moments that really hit at the heart of humanity, whether they're very directly, obviously hitting at the heart of humanity and making that point, or if they're sort of making a symbolic point, and that works as well. So those are my top five films of 2022. When I come back next, I'm going to be talking about the worst films of 2022. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the worst of 2022. You know what's interesting? I have heard a lot of people vent their spleen about how mean-spirited worst of the year lists are. That's a narrative I've started seeing just a couple years ago, and it's kind of ramped up. Most of the time I see it on like Twitter. And I know Twitter's a dumpster fire right now. So let's talk about the worst of the year. I think the worst of the year lists are hilarious. They're a way for me to blow off some steam because I had to sit through these movies. You can hear my advice and avoid them, or at least know what you're getting into. If I got to sit through them, I can rage about them. And I understand no one seeks to make a bad movie. Everybody has their own taste. But when I have a movie that's as bad as it is, I like to complain about it. And some of these, what's funny is some of these movies on the list, I'll get to in a second, they're technically well done. It's just they so failed to meet what they could be. That's why they made the list. So let's start off with number 5.
They say if you want something different, you have to do something different. Yes, I'll marry you. You.
Do you, some guy, take Kat to be your lawfully wedded wife?
Okay. That was crazy.
Kat Valdez left the guy from the concert, then also married her Uber driver.
It's an insane situation. I say we offer $5,000 and let it all blow over.
Or I could stay married to him.
This was Marry Me, which was on Peacock and in theaters at the same time. It starred Jennifer Lopez and Owen Wilson. And it, I mean, honestly, as a romance, it's fine. It's passable. It's kind of crap anyways. But what I found so annoying about it was it felt like it was written for her 20 years ago and just never got produced. It's weird making this movie for people in their 50s. This was a movie for somebody in their 20s or 30s, the characters. And it ignores reality, and it's not funny. And I mean, Owen Wilson looks like he's just holding his nose and suffering through this entire movie. It's your very typical Jennifer Lopez rom-com that's not very good. And it really could have been so much better. So that's why it's the last one of my worst movies of 2022. But let's talk about number 4.
Dr. Michael Morbius, you've been missing for 2 months. Then you were found on a container ship that washed up off of Long Island. What did you do to yourself, Doctor?
I wish I knew. I went from dying to being more alive than ever.
It worked.
Not exactly. I have increased strength and speed and some form of bat radar. Who wants to hunt and consume blood?
Much to the chagrin of people making memes all around the world, I was not a fan of Morbius. I was not ready for people to go, it's Morbin time. I did find the meme potential of Morbius extremely hilarious. It was introduced to me by my kids because I went and saw it. I said, this was a terrible movie and I never thought about it again. And then I realized there were so many people that realized how terrible it was. But this generation, that Gen Z attitude is to watch a movie ironically and watch a terrible movie, but still pretend to love it, or to sort of in almost a countercultural development to heap praise on the movie. And then when they re-released Morbius and nobody went to go see it, I thought it was even funnier. So I've live tweeted this movie. It's a terrible movie. I've watched it a couple times. It is a bad movie and it is an absolute misfire, but it's great to make fun of. Speaking of another movie that's a misfire, let's talk about number 3 on my list.
Welcome to the Victory Project. We're all here because we believe in the mission.
What are we doing?
Changing the world.
What are we doing?
Changing the world.
That's right.
What do you think they're really doing out there?
What do you mean? Do you even know what the Victory Project actually is? Have you ever asked?
Do you?
Don't Worry, Darling had potential. And when you look at it, it's not a good story. It's a easily telegraphed, very guessable story. The twists and turns are so painfully obvious from like the trailer of the movie. And I appreciate Olivia Wilde trying to do what is essentially a Twilight Zone movie. What put me against this film, and this is a great example of how filmmakers and their promotion and the way they talk about the movie and the way they present the movie in public can actually color your opinion. If I had seen this in a vacuum, I would have been like, it's an okay kind of stupid movie. But the way they were, it was like supposed to be the greatest thing. And Olivia Wilde was out there talking about how it was, you know, sexually liberating, which it's not, and how it's supposed to be very female centric and very positive female, which it's not. I mean, she doesn't even understand the movie she made, which is amazing. And then the fact that she's using the movie and the getting in a feud with the lead actress just to build up this fake relationship she had with Harry Styles in order to get more notice for the film. I mean, this movie was just, I was tired of the movie before it came out because of all the shenanigans going off set, and it wasn't good enough to bring me back. Beautiful looking movie, and you know, Florence Pugh throws down for it, but it is a terrible movie. And in the number two spot, we've got a Michael Bay movie.
My wife needs this surgery. This is real life.
How's that right? You put your life down on the line for this country? You leave your family, your home? How much do you need?
231.
How about more? 32 million. I need an extra man.
I came to you for a loan.
Look, have I ever gotten you anything that I couldn't get you out of?
It's time for you to do something for your family.
Go, 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 go!
Lock everything down. Nothing gets out.
That's right. I am not a fan of Michael Bay. And Ambulance is absolutely nonsensical. Ambulance is what looks like a movie like Rescue 911 type of TV show thrown in a blender with a drone that is driven by a chihuahua on cocaine. I mean, that is the way this movie feels. It is over the, it's exactly what you'd expect from a Michael Bay movie. This crazy over the top action that makes no sense and has no pragmatic standing in reality. You need to have a certain level of reality for this to work, because then at a certain point, it just becomes a cartoon. You have some liberties you can take, but they take so many with it. It's just the characters are terrible. And it's, again, Michael Bay just being like, I'm going to do a movie and I'm going to cast this woman because she looks really hot. I don't care if she can act. And this actress can act in this movie. It's just, he gives her nothing to work on. It's a terrible movie. Way too long, way too loud, and the guy needs to put a leash on himself. And now my number one movie, the worst film of 2022, and this is going to shock some people.
We have a problem.
I received another weird email.
There's no reason to get caught up in any intrigue.
I'm worried. She's starting to disappear into herself.
You want to dance the mask, you must service the composer. You've got to sublimate yourself, your ego, and yes, your identity.
This is on a lot of people's best of the year list. This has won Best Picture awards. But I hated Tar. I hated every minute of that movie. It is so pretentious. And I know people like, oh, you didn't like Tar because you didn't like the character? She's supposed to be a servant character. No, my problem with Tar is there's nothing interesting about it. And there's no plot for like an hour and a half. There's really no plot. There's a hint of actually a story in the background, but it's just, I'm just going to show her being a jerk. And then as much as you dislike her, and I know that's the point, there's nobody else that's nice in the movie. Everybody else is pretentious and obnoxious and snooty and elitist. And the movie's 3 freaking hours long. Can we stop with the 3-hour long movies? Dude, this movie does not need to be 3 hours. It's an exhausting movie. And oh, sure, Cate Blanchett does a great job in it, but it is a terrible movie. It is boring. It is completely narcissistic, and it thinks it's being oh so brilliant. And I hate those kind of movies. And that's it for my worst movies of 2022. When I come back next, I'm going to be talking about the film White Noise and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Halloween Ends. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's slow down and wrap things up for the year. Last episode of the year, last episode of 2022. Let's wrap things up with a new movie that's this week, and it's not out in theaters. I mean, I could talk about A Man Called Otto, but that's just in limited release. I'm going to save that for January. That's the new Tom Hanks movie. But let's talk about one that's on Netflix. It came out about a month ago. I think it was right around Thanksgiving that it went to limited theaters. And it made some buzz, but it didn't make a ton of buzz. And that is White Noise. It's directed by Noah Baumbach and stars Adam Driver and Greta Gerwig as a family. And it's based on this book. Well, the book's called White Noise. I've not heard of it. I've never been sort of like the postmodern novel reading type guy. But it's sort of like Infinite Jest. If you've heard of Infinite Jest, it's that postmodern novel that's all taking place kind of in the author's head. And it's also known as a legendary unfilmable book. And we'll talk about how that goes after we play the trailer. During an industrial emergency in the 1980s, a family flees for safety while dealing with interpersonal struggles.
What are these children, yours?
That's mine from Wives 1 and 3. There's Babette's from Husband 2. Wilder is ours. We're each other's fourth.
This is good, Jack. I hope it lasts forever.
They're calling it the airborne toxic event.
It won't come this way.
Will we have to leave our home?
Of course not.
How do you know?
I just know.
Okay, what if it's dangerous?
Evacuate all places of residence.
One of the things that's neat about this movie, it was filmed kind of in my backyard. It was filmed up in northeastern Ohio, I believe around Akron, which is south of Cleveland. I mean, it's still far enough away, but I actually know people who are in the movie. And I thought it was neat because I actually had the opportunity in October to travel to a junket and see it at the New York International Film Festival and do a Q&A with Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach. I actually had a chance to talk to Danny Elfman, who was the composer. And I will tell you this. And I said this to Elfman, the movie is not what you typically think a Danny Elfman score would be. I mean, you're going back to Danny Elfman cut his teeth making a mark for himself to score movies, doing Tim Burton films and superhero movies. And his stuff is very bombastic there's very distinct style. And over the years, he's softened it and become a little bit more of a musical chameleon where he can do a score and you don't immediately recognize it as Danny Elfman's score. And he actually is proud of that. He actually said that's been his intent over the last, 10, 15 years. But White Noise is, like I said, one of those unfilmable books. And there's a reason those books are unfilmable. Some of these books, they take place so much in the narrative structure as sort of like this stream of consciousness. One of them that's been considered unfilmable, even though they did a terrible adaptation of it, was Breakfast of Champions, Kurt Vonnegut, which is one of my favorite books of all time. But one of the things with these books that are unfilmable is they rely so much on the reader's interpretation of it. And I love Breakfast of Champions. I think it's a brilliant book. But if I were to make it into a movie, for example, and they did make it into a movie like 25 years ago, and it was terrible because they took all the surreal stuff out. The on-the-surface story is kind of lame. It's all the surreal and metaphysical stuff that makes that book work. Now, if I made my version of Breakfast of Champions, it would look great for mine, and it would be very associated to my vision of it. But what my vision is going to be very different to anybody else's. And so you can make it a perfect adaptation of it for how you read the book, but everyone reads the book differently. It all takes place in their head. And there's a lot of dialogue, especially in White Noise, where it's not realistic dialogue. It's internal monologues expressed in words. And that's, they make a point to do that and they stay true to that. But sometimes those lines, as clever of lines as there are, they don't make pragmatic sense and they seem very disingenuous when you hear people saying the lines, as opposed to when you read them, you're sort of going at it with your own internal monologue. So this was the kind of movie that was almost impossible to make. And did they make a good job? I don't know. I've never read the book. But as I watch it, I go, I can totally see where this is an interpretation of somebody's version of a book that is not as linear and put together as a movie has to be, if that makes sense. I mean, it's kind of one of those spectacular failures. I'm not saying the movie's a failure, but it is impossible for it to be anything to any two people at the same time. And it's a noble effort by Noah Baumbach. But bringing an unfilmable novel to life makes it difficult to connect to both fans and newbies. I've never read the book. It was hard for me to make an emotional connection to this. I'm sure people who read the books are still going to have trouble making emotional connections to this because it's not how they first experienced it. And while it's clever and it's interesting and it's the kind of movie you want to watch a couple times, it's something you can dissect on a more intellectual level. I don't know. It's tough. And I even asked them, I'm like, how is this accessible to people in flyover country? Where you film this? You know, how are they going to react to it? Because, you know, the stuff that Baumbach makes, it's mostly New York Film Festival type material. Same thing with Greta Gerwig. Oh, yeah, she's doing, you know, Barbie. But most of the stuff like Lady Bird, that's a film festival type movie. But this is made in flyover country. It's on Netflix, so anybody can watch it. But how do you make it accessible to them? And, you know, is it as pretentious as it seems to be? Or are they emulating the pretentiousness of the novel? Or are they purposely making it feel falsely pretentious so you get that feeling of inauthenticity? I don't know. It's an interesting movie, but like I said, it's a challenge. But I'm still going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. I want to take a look finally at Halloween Ends. The saga of Michael Myers comes to an end as the residents of Haddonfield face a new rash of killings.
I was certain that I saw him watching me.
You pretend like you moved on, but you're actually just obsessed with death.
What are you going to do when Michael comes back for you? Because he is coming.
But this time, something feels different. He's more dangerous.
It all ends now.
You came here to kill me, so do it.
Halloween Ends is such a polarizing film. And I get why they're doing it. I get how they made it the way it is. The first Halloween in the David Gordon Green trilogy is a tribute to the original Halloween. It just makes it modernized with more killing and more blood. But it is essentially a retelling of the original Halloween type story. And Halloween Kills is not the story of the babysitters and the kids in town becoming victims of Michael Myers. It's about the town becoming victims of Michael Myers. And this one is a tribute in a weird way to all the other imperfect sequels to the Halloween franchise. And I thought that's kind of brilliant. Now, it sidelines Michael Myers, but that happens in these movies. I mean, in both the Friday the 13th series and the Halloween series, Michael Myers gets sidelined. And both of them point to a secondary character as a new potential killer. This is right out of Slasher Movie 101, but everyone just wanted another slice and dice. But I love the fact that David Gordon Green did something unique with it, did something different, and was aware of the types of movies he was making and what he was honoring in the process. And he didn't go as far off the deep end as something like Halloween Resurrection, which is absolute complete rubbish. But it's an interesting movie. I think if you can remove yourself from what you expect it to be, it's an interesting movie. I find it compelling, especially against the backdrop of horror cinema and slasher cinema. Now, the Blu-ray comes with a bunch of deleted scenes, and it also has a couple behind-the-scenes featurettes. It's got one about ending the series. It's got one about Jamie Lee Curtis as the final girl. It talks about Haddonfield. It's got a gag reel. It's got three or four more behind-the-scenes short bonus features, and then a feature commentary. So, I mean, the disc is loaded with stuff. It's worth checking out, and it's worth getting for physical media. It's not just the movie. So you've got these bonus features to it, and I think David Gordon Green did a good job with this. I know that is not a view shared by a lot, but I found it an interesting movie. So I'm going to say that Halloween Ends. I'm going to keep my review and say that Halloween Ends and the Blu-ray associated with it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the year. Next year, I'm going to be back and talking about, you know, the January horror films like Megan. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home, and Happy New Year.